We are ready to start 1 Samuel 15. Actually, we got through the first two verses, but I do want to point something out in case you have been kind of reading along and checking back. I want to show you a little bit about how Hebrew narrative tends to work. If you will remember, if you just go back one chapter to verses 47 and 48 of chapter 14, if you will remember, this is in the middle of a section that the author is giving us kind of a summary of Saul's activities. And notice what he says in verse 47, that after Saul captured the kingship, you remember that verse over Israel, notice what it says. It says he fought all around against all his enemies. Now notice who it names. It names Moab, the Ammonites, Edom, the kings of Zobah, and the Philistines. All right, and against, and in every place where he turned, remember this word Yarisha, he won. He treated them badly, whatever, however you want to translate that. And now notice in verse 48, okay, Vayaskal, and he acted valiantly, is how we translate it. And now notice what it says. And he struck Amalek, okay, and he delivered Israel from the hand of his oppressors. Okay. Now, notice that it says that here, kind of as a summary. Now in verse 15, if you will remember verse 1, notice, remember what it says. It's chapter 15 now is all, the reason I bring this up is because chapter 15 is all about the war against Amalek. See? So if you kind of think that narrative is just proceeding in chronological order all the time, that's not really how Hebrew narrative works. So that you might say, oh, well, here it said he defeated Amalek. Well, what's going on here? Because in chapter 15, he's still fighting Amalek. But very often, and you kind of see this right off the bat from Genesis 1 and Genesis 2, you'll see that the narrator will summarize something and then backfill it with more details. So you can't always assume that it's going kind of in strict chronological order. So what he does is give kind of a bird's eye view of Saul's victories in battle in this chapter 14. And then remember, he talks about Saul's family a little bit and brings up some important names that he's going to expand on later. And I think I mentioned that. But notice here in chapter 15 now, having talked about the defeat of Amalek, it's like now he's going to go into detail about this event. And remember, it becomes kind of a watershed event in Saul's kingship because of what he didn't do what he was supposed to do. I mean, this is kind of the beginning of the unraveling for real. So, that's why when I got to verse 2 of chapter 15, remember, thus says Yahweh Zebaot, now notice that verb pakati, even though it's perfect, I translated it as future. I will visit that which Amalek did to Israel. Namely, I will punish that which Amalek. Now, I translate it as future because the rest of the narrative is talking about what's going to happen. In other words, here it hasn't happened yet. All right. So what you're seeing is a less common meaning for the perfect. You see it in prophetic texts. You see it in colloquial Hebrew. All right. So if you are thinking about Hebrew, think of it as kind of there's a standard biblical Hebrew that's kind of the function as the prestige language, especially probably in the time of David onward. Underneath that crust, there are dialectical and colloquial versions of Hebrew that sometimes come into the text. And that's what. So we've seen a number of those syntactical, lexical, and grammatical features in Samuel. And here is just a kind of a less common meaning. So it's not like I don't think there's some kind of big rhetorical move here by using the perfect that he's, you know, I certainly will punish. You know, I don't know if that, I don't think that that's kind of the force of it. I think it's just a different use, all right? Especially in this context, all right? So that's where we finished. I will punish Amalek, who put himself in the way when Israel went up from Egypt. That's where we stopped. So notice that Yahweh is remembering the trouble that Israel had as they were entering the promised land. Okay? So we're actually starting with verse 3. Does anyone have any questions about that before we go on?
Is there a label for that use of perfect?
Well, see, in prophecy you call it a prophetic perfect, and the normal explanation is because the prophet is looking at the action as if it has already taken place. So it's kind of, they give it a rhetorical explanation. But I don't know if that's the best explanation or not. Some people say, no, it's just a rarer meaning that you see in spoken texts. And prophecy is, of course, one of those where, and poetry to it. It tends to be used more often there than in kind of standard texts, like you would see in Genesis, Exodus, you know, the Pentateuch. Okay, and that's why I'm kind of arguing against that kind of rhetorical function here. Although you could argue that, I suppose. You'd have to really, I think the best way to kind of determine that is to try to, you'd have to track down all the cases where that's used and make your best argument, so... Okay.
Kev, is this the kind of phenomenon that some would say is an awkward seam and shows different sources?
Probably. Especially, you know, the one I was talking about earlier, how it seems not to be in place. I mean, if you're working with a conception of narrative that everything has to be kind of chronological and logical, then obviously this functions as evidence that they put stuff together badly.
Right.
Right. So, but you know, I think that when you look at how narrative works, it just kind of does this all the time.
That's assuming that ancient Hebrews wrote the way 19th century Germans did.
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right. There's always this, in narrative, you see especially this kind of foreshadowing stuff on many different levels. Not just this, but this is just kind of one example of kind of how they do stuff. And they go in a circle more. And even in modern day, in other societies, non-Western societies, they tend to do that. I'll never forget Ron Mudge when he took my Deuteronomy class. We were noticing how circular Moses' argument was. He'll bring something up, talk about it, and then come back. And he said, "Oh, well, that's just what they do in Togo all the time. You know, I'm translating something. I say this doesn't make any sense at all. They'll say it makes perfect sense to me because." And he told me he actually had to learn to kind of preach that way, not in Western linear thinking, but in a more roundabout. And that's kind of what you're seeing here. I think. This is just one example of it.
Is that the same as Genesis then, where in Genesis 2 he gives it?
Well, see, that's where we would make the case that here he gives an overview in Genesis 1. In Genesis 2 he focuses in, alright? And, you know, it's kind of one another kind of example like that of the kinds of things that will happen. Or like we saw, they'll mention a name for no reason, but then it becomes important later in the narrative. So, alright? So we get to verse 3 then. Here's what God told Samuel to tell Saul. Atalek vehikita et Amalek vehacharamtem et kol asher lo. Okay. Now, atalek, imperative from Halak, go and strike. Notice that form. This is just what we've seen it very often. The imperative followed by a vav plus second masculine, singular, perfect from Naka, Hiphil. Notice the hey at the end. That's just a spelling variation. I checked this out, and Hikita occurs with a hey maybe 3 times in the Bible. About 17 or 18 times without it, just kind of the more normal. So this is kind of there's spelling variations where the hey operates as a vowel indicator.
Different sources,
right? Okay, anyway. Go and smite at Amalek and Hacharamtem. Here's a word you probably haven't run across in a while. It's from Haram. You know the noun Cherem. So put them under the ban or devote them to destruction. Notice that this is a second masculine plural. There is an inconsistency in number here from Hikata, which is second singular, and here second plural. Again, this kind of inconsistency is consistent with more colloquial texts. All right. So put them under the ban or destroy them, we might say. Destroy et kol, all which is to him. All right. Velo takmo alav, and do not have pity on him or do not spare him, from chamal. All right. The hemata, here it is again. This is from what? Hemata. From mut, It is a hiphil, vav plus perfect, second masculine singular. Look at the hey ending. Don't let that fool you. All right? And do not spare him and put him to death. Okay, again, you understand the object. Me'ish, from man, ad isha, to woman. Me'olel, from child. Va'ad yonek, to infant, the sucking one. Mishor, from bull. Va'ad seh, to sheep. Megamal, from camel. Va'ad chamor, to ass. There you get a nice review of all your basic animal vocab. We won't go any farther. I don't know why he just didn't say, just destroy all the animals. But he wanted to make clear, notice how precise he's getting. Because you know what happens. Alright? Supposed to destroy everything. He makes it clear. Alright, any questions through verse 3? Verse 4. Vayeshama Shaul et ha'am. Then Saul, now look at this form. Yeshama, what is that? PL from Shama. This only, the PL Shama, notice you guys are more familiar with it in the call to hear, or the hiphil, to cause to hear. It only occurs two or three times in the Hebrew Bible and in the PL, and it means to summon together, to call together in both contexts. So Saul called the people together by Yifkadim, and he mustered them. Okay, Pakad. Or maybe enlisted them might be another good translation. Remember, pakad kind of means all kinds of things. It's kind of one of those weird words. It depends on the context. All right, at Telaim, that's a place. So he mustered them at Telaim. All right, now here are the numbers. Matayim elef ragli, 200. Okay, matayim. Notice that that's the dual form from mate, 100. So 200 elef, 200,000. Ragli, footman. This is an easy one, even if you've never seen this word before, because it's regel, you know, foot. So with a little yod on, just remember foot people. Ragli, 100,000 foot people. Va'eseret, and 20. I'm sorry, 10. Alafim, 10,000. Et ish Yehuda, 10,000. Well, here it means 10,000 from Judah, but I don't know why they use the et there. And 10,000 Judeans, men of Judah. Okay. Vayavo Shaul, then Saul went ad ir to the city of Amalek. To the city of Amalek. Vayarev banachal. Okay, now notice the, look at that, vayarev. Alright? Because it looks like it's from the root reeve. Alright. Okay, or, yeah, it look, reeve means to contend with. Remember, notice that you have the comments under the yud, which is kind of telling you, oh, it's a hollow verb, which doesn't really fit here because he hasn't fought them yet, as you will see. So, I think the footnote explains, let's see what it has here, from 5, yeah. There's two manuscripts that have it from the root Yarad. They have a totally different root to go down. And he went down to the Wadi or to the river. But notice the Septuagint and the Vulgate have it from the root Arav. The Aleph, they say, has gone away. Arav means to lie in ambush. So that's what you will see most translations put for this. And he waited in ambush at the Nahal, okay, at the Wadi, or the river. So it's like the Aleph has elided. And that sometimes happens with words. Okay. Any questions on verse? And at least we do have manuscript evidence to kind of suggest that, with the Septuagint, at least. Okay, any questions on verse 5?
What's the contrast between a foot guy and a man of Judah?
Yeah, I know.
Is that maybe a foreshadowing of some sort? Because it doesn't seem to be a pair that goes together.
See, I was thinking about that myself. Yeah, I don't know why Judah is kind of put, unless he's just adding this note, there's 200,000 men.
I mean, I can't and remember, did the Judahites come in prominently later?
Yeah. No, I mean, unless obviously it's because David, comes in. But I don't know why he specifies
it. It's
interesting that you already see sometimes these distinctions between north and south. Yeah. So you get this underlying tension between them all the time. So maybe he's just commenting that there were, and I'm not sure whether this is 10,000 in addition or 10,000 were men of Judah or something like that. You know, that's why I was puzzling about what the that function of that F is there. It's not easy. You know, most translations just kind of go straight out. No one really comments on it. So, verse 6, Vayomer Shaul, then Saul said to the Canaanites, And I don't know how he was, don't ask me how he was laying in ambush and then talked to the Canaanites. Okay? As you will see. Then he talked to the Canaanites. Leku Suru Redu. Three imperatives. What's the root of the first one? Halak. The root of the second one? Sur. Root of the third one? Yarad. Good. Yarad. So it's actually go, turn, Yarad, go down from the midst of the Amalekites. Amaleki. Okay? So notice three imperatives in a row. And the first one may just function as kind of a come on, turn, go down from the midst of the Amalekites. Okay, so they're with the Amalekites. I don't know how that worked, whether they got some Kenites who were walking by or something. I don't know. So, hey, come here. Get over here. Okay, now notice this one. Less osipeka. This is from the root asaf, to gather. It is a call, first common singular from asaf. Normally, remember you have certain first aleph verbs. I say I am willing to eat what you bake, though I perish. The first person, the aleph drops out. Well, asaf isn't one of those. In the other two occurrences, it's e'esof. And then there, in another one it does too in Micah, but it's a different form than this one yet. So here again you're seeing kind of a rare form. Lest I gather you with him. See, namely, lest I do to you, I'm going to do to him, basically. So lest I gather you with him. Okay? Va'ata, and as for you, asita chesed, you did. Here again, second masculine singular spelled with a hey. So notice it seems to be a characteristic here. Okay? And as for you, you did chesed. You showed mercy in kol b'nei Israel, with all the children of Israel, ba'alotam, in their going up from Egypt. Notice that ba'alotam is a simple call, infinitive construct from Allah. So when they went up from Egypt. Ba'yasar keni. And so the Kenites turned. Ah, they're smart. From Sur, the Vayasar, they turned from the midst of the Amalek, from the middle of Amalek. Alright? I don't know how that happened. There's a lot going on here that we don't know. They passed the note along, okay, everybody, get out of here. They're waiting by the river. We're not going to tell Amalek. I don't know. Funny. Right, any questions through verse 6? Verse 7, here we go. Vayak Shaul et Amalek. So Saul struck Amalek. See, here's the same word that was used in the previous chapter to summarize the event. Vayak, that he struck Amalek in verse 48. Here it is again from Nakah. So Saul struck Amalek. Me Chavila, from Chavila, that's a place. Boaka. It's a call infinitive construct from Bo. So from Chavila, kind of as you are going to Shur, which is Al Pnei Mitzrayim, which is in front of Egypt, or some you might even say, which is almost to Egypt. All right, so I guess that means they really put the hurt on him. Vayit pos et Agag Melech Amalek, and he seized Agag. Notice that verb is from Tafas, to seize or to grasp, call infinitive or call vav consecutive imperfect. And he seized Agag, the king of Amalek, chai, alive. Ve'et kol ha'am, and but all the people, kol ha'am, hecherim lefi charev. See, but all the people, Hecherim, he destroyed. Here's that Hittite from Haram again. He destroyed by the at the mouth of the sword. So notice what it's saying here. He seized Agag, the king of Amalek, Chai, alive. But all the people he destroyed at the mouth of the sword. Okay? Now, here we go. Here's the condemning verse. Va'yachmo Sha'ul ve'ha'am al Agag. Okay. And Saul and the people, Chamal, they spared, had mercy on Agag. And, not coincidentally, al Meitav Hatzon, and on the best. Meitav, notice it's from the root Yatav, to be good, and this is just a noun with a mem attached to it. All the good stuff, see, all the best. And so they had mercy on, or they spared the best of the zone, of the sheep, and habakar, and the cattle, beha mishnim, and the, this is from Mishnah, which means second, and the second things, okay, I guess that means stuff that's pretty good, I'm not sure what that means. And on the karim, another word for sheep, and on all hatov, and on all the good stuff. Okay? Velo avu, and they were not willing, hacharimam. That's a hifil infinitive construct from karam again. And they were not willing to destroy them. Okay? Bekol ha melaka. Okay, but all the melaka, remember this word from Hebrew 1? All the work, but here it doesn't mean work, all the stuff, all the products maybe. Now here's a weird word, nemibezeh, the despised stuff. And notice most people suggested that it's from nivzeh, bazeh means to despise, and that mem shouldn't be there. So it's all the stuff, the despised and the nameis. Normally, this is a nifal participle from masas, which means to melt. But here it means all the worthless and the ruined stuff. Okay. It, hecherimu, it they destroyed. All right, so notice it makes it very clear here, reading between the lines, if you're reading along, you know that this is a big mistake, because notice the detail that the narrator goes in. You know, we're kind of going along real quick with the whole Kenite thing. We don't even know how that ever happened. He doesn't go into any detail with that. But notice how he slows us down when he gets to verse 9 and tells us what Saul did and didn't do, is the kind of exact actions of the people here in verse 9. Okay. Any questions? Okay, we'll do one more verse here. We'll do two more because 10 short. And the word of the Lord came to Samuel Lemor, saying, Nichamti ki him lakti et Shaul Amalek. Nichamti, I regret. From Nacham. Right? I regret that him lakti, I made Saul king. Notice that this is simply a hifil from malak, means to be king or to reign as king. Here's to make king. So I regret that I made Saul reign as king. Ki shav me'achare. For he has turned. This is from Shu, called third masculine singular. For he has turned from after me. Okay. Ve'et devarai. And my words, lo hekim. He did not keep. From kum. Notice the hifil. Okay. Vayichar Lishmuel. Yichar is from what root? Vayichar. Anyone see it? It's one of those pesky third hays. It's from chara, to be angry. And it was hot to Samuel. Okay? Namely, Samuel became angry. Now notice what he does. His first move. Vayizak. And he cried out, El Yahweh Kol Ha Laila. And he cried out to Yahweh all the night. I would like to hear that prayer. Wonder what it was. Okay? But notice the condemning words, what Yahweh said to him. I have regretted that I made Saul king. He must have known what that meant. It wasn't good for Saul. Alright. Any questions through those 11 verses? Okay? Alright, very good. Thank you very much. And like I said, we won't meet next week, but then after that, we'll continue.